Now, what makes some violins sound better than others? To find out, a team of physicists have subjected hundreds of the instruments to scientific scrutiny. The F-shaped hole carved through the body of the instrument turns out to be a major contribution to the sound. Greer Jackson's been hearing how.
I'm Nick McCreese. I'm a professor at MIT.
Nick's love affair with stringed instruments began 10 years ago after a trip to Istanbul. What you can hear is Nick playing the lute. It's similar to a guitar, except it has a mere 26 strings, and the body is shaped a bit like half an egg. It wasn't until Nick was leafing through a friend's sheet music collection that his background in science and music really came to head.
I happened to see a Renaissance songbook that a friend of mine had lying around, and on it I saw a picture of something that looked like a violin that an angel was holding, and it didn't have an F-hole on it. And I thought, this is interesting. It had more of a C-shaped hole. And I thought, could there have been an evolution?
It turns out there was, from a C-shaped hole to an F-shaped hole. F-holes are these slim chasms either side of the bridge in the strings that reveal the innards of the violin. The thing is, the violin, complete with F-holes, was first designed in 1555 by Andrea Amati. After the Amati family's reign of violin making, there was the Stradivari family and then the Guarneri family. All three families carved out these F-shaped holes. All three families were from the Italian town of Cremona, and all three families' designs of violin are still revered to this day. However, by the 1750s, this Cremonese dynasty of violin makers died, and with them, their trade secrets.
For us now to go back and understand what their methods and approaches were is a bit of a mystery for violin makers as well as scientists. And so what we're trying to do in our analysis is go back and look at the physical remains and see how they changed.
Everyone wants to recreate the sounds of these famous Cremonese violins, but it's pretty hard. Each violin has its own distinct sound, even when building like for like, because of the handmade nature of the trade.
I'm Juliet Barker. I've been a violin maker for 60 years. And I've been teaching violin making to amateurs for 50 years now. I actually play the viola.
So talk me through how you might go about making a violin. I'm sure there are many, many steps involved.
Well, there's also many, many ways of doing it. The best job of all, of course, is choosing the wood. And you look at all the pretty maple for the back, the ribs and the scroll. And then you look for a nice piece of spruce to make the front. So you have to shape a couple of blocks, bend a couple of ribs, and then you've got your outline fixed, and then you can get on to the carving. For us, the things that matter are the choice of material to begin with, and then getting the right curves on the outside, the arching, and thicknessing the wood correct for that piece of wood, and every piece of wood, of course, is different. And they're the things that will make the instrument sound good or not.
For Nick, the MIT professor, it was the F-hole that caught his ear. Like a detective, Nick took measurements of 470 Cremonese violins, plotted them against other design variants, and
one of the fascinating things that we found is that the F-hole length increased from the Amati time period to the Guarneri time period.
And how did that affect their sound?
Well, what it's going to do is it's going to make instruments with the longer F-holes more powerful in that low-frequency register. What we found going across the Cremonese period, it was about a 60% increase in power. And some of the other design changes that we found that led to increasing power was also an increase in the back plate thickness.
This would make sense. Amati violins are usually chosen to play in smaller venues. They're quieter, less powerful. Whereas Guarneri's violins, with their bigger F-holes, are known for being very powerful and are used in huge concert halls. But why does increasing the size of the F-hole increase its power?
If you consider what happens on a windy day near a tall building, the wind comes and the skyscraper is obstructing the flow. Well, that air has to escape somewhere. It goes around the skyscraper. So if you're standing near the base of a skyscraper, you're going to feel it's very, very windy at the perimeter. If you walk some meters away from the perimeter, away from the building, you're going to find it's a lot less windy. And that's essentially what we found. So if you maximize the perimeter length and minimize the void area, you're actually more efficient acoustically. So the circle is going to be the least efficient. It has the most void area and the smallest perimeter. And something like the F-hole, it turns out, has a very, very high perimeter and very little void area. So it's extremely efficient.
Does that mean we can now build these sort of optimal violins that are super powerful?
Well, I wouldn't say that. What we do know for sure is that at these frequencies, we're very confident that these are the effects that are important. How everything plays together and how the coupled evolution with the other frequencies and the other ranges, we can't answer those questions yet. But that's the way science works. It works one piece at a time. And the nice thing about this is that the physical data that we've uncovered from the Cremonese instruments is consistent with basic physics. So what this has enabled us to do is eliminate a lot of trial and error and guesswork and repetition when you have a physical principle guiding you.
Music to my ears. That's Claire Jackson speaking with MIT's Nick McCreese and violin maker Juliet Barker.
Indeed, it must be, Kat, because you're a string player, but of harps, aren't you? So slightly different technology there.
Yeah, I am. I think my soundboard of my harp is also made of spruce, and I had to take it to be repaired once. It's fascinating going to a harp workshop, I tell you.
I was lucky enough to interview a gentleman from Texas A&M University called Joseph Nojvari, and he was interested in this same question of why these violins from this part of Italy and this segment of history all sounded so good. And he had luckily managed to get hold of some bits of wood from some of the Stradivari and Guarneri violins. He did some analysis, and his conclusion was that the wood had been chemically brutalized by boiling in various copper and iron salts and things, because you could still see the chemical fingerprint of that having happened. And they suggested that this had in turn affected the acoustic properties of the wood. Others have suggested that the wood got brutalized in that way merely as a form of insect control, because furniture from that period is riddled with woodworm, but these violins never are. So one wonders if that might be part of it too.
You are listening to The Naked Scientist with Chris Smith and me, Kat Arney.